It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A huge asteroid hurtles toward the Earth. Will it be the end of civilization? That's a frightening scenario we've heard often enough. However, in actual fact, 2 years ago, our Earth experienced a close shave just as perilous, but most newspapers didn't even mention it. And it was not an asteroid. But joining us to tell us what it was is Greg Howes, Associate Professor of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Iowa. Hi, Professor Howes. Hi, Greg.
Hi.
You study solar storms, turbulence in the solar wind. What exactly happened about 2 years ago?
What happened, what we sometimes call a solar storm, not technically, is a violent explosion that occurs on the surface of the sun. One can think of it analogously like a volcanic explosion to some degree. But instead of launching lava up into the air, it launches plasma, which is ionized gas, protons and electrons, up. And again, unlike a volcanic eruption where that lava will come down and land somewhere, this has so much energy to it that it actually escapes the sun and barrels through the solar system. And one of those can actually impact the Earth or the magnetosphere of the Earth. The technical term for it is called a coronal mass ejection. And there are actually a number of things that go on when this happens. There's initially, when this first happens, there's a massive solar flare. That emits copious amounts of X-rays and ultraviolet rays, which can ionize our outer atmosphere of the Earth. And that can lead to problems with radio communications, communicating with GPS satellites. The next thing that happens, and that takes light about 8 minutes to get from the sun to the Earth. So that'll happen in 8 minutes. Of course, we don't know until the lights reach us that it's happened. And then from minutes to hours later comes a shower of very high-energy particles, high-energy protons. Now, those don't impact us on the Earth because the magnetic field of the Earth protects us from that. But any technological assets, spacecraft that are out in the magnetosphere can get showered by these high-energy particles that can cause damage to the spacecraft. And, of course, any humans that happen to be up there on the space station or on some kind of a mission need to get into a shielded area because it can be potentially fatal.
So 2 years ago, we had this massive ejection from the sun. And the sun was one particular spot on the sun that was almost pointed toward the Earth. Is that what made it so perilous?
It just missed. So the last piece of this sequence is, as I said, this coronal mass ejection. It's billions of tons of plasma that get launched out at an estimated 2,500 kilometers per second. Just a phenomenal speed of this massive amount of material. Now, that is very directional. Most of these other things kind of shine out everywhere. But that, if that hits the Earth, now what happened in April 2012, one of these things occurred. It just so happened that it missed the Earth. If it had been a week earlier, it would have been aimed right at the Earth and it would have impacted us. I think at the time, I mean, partly newspapers are unaware of solar storms. But at the time, even scientists weren't quite aware of the magnitude of this event. But it happened that one of our observing spacecraft, what's called STEREO, which is a mission, it's two spacecraft that are slowly encircling the sun away from the Earth so that any time between the Earth and these two spacecraft, we can see the entire surface of the sun. Well, one of those spacecraft, STEREO A, happened to be right in the line of fire of this massive solar storm, and it was able to measure what happened. I mean, it's designed to be able to withstand the impact of something like that and to actually measure and give us the scientific data on what happened. So recently, within a year or so later, scientists were analyzing the data and trying to estimate, well, what would have happened had that hit the Earth?
What would have been the impact? What would have happened to us here?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where things get a little scary to some degree. What can happen essentially when one of these massive solar storms hits the Earth, it impacts our Earth's magnetosphere, which is kind of a protective shield. And that material can't penetrate through the magnetic field, but it can compress it, and some high-energy particles can get in there. Now, what happens here is it generates a large magnetic field or a large current that generates a magnetic field. That change in the magnetic field, although imperceptible to us as biological beings, can actually cause serious damage to something like our power infrastructure. The way that this works is it's essentially the same principle as how we generate electricity. What we do when we want to generate electricity is we have a permanent magnet, has a magnetic field going through it, and we take a little wire loop and we rotate that loop within that magnetic field. As that loop rotates, the magnetic field going through that loop changes in time. So when the loop is sideways, no magnetic field goes through the loop, and when the loop is perpendicular to it, lots of magnetic field goes through. So it's oscillating in time. And according to the laws of physics, to Maxwell's equations, that generates a current, a voltage. Mm-hmm. And that's the voltage that we tap to generate electricity. That's how all of our power plants are able to generate electricity with turbines or windmills, all of that. That's the essential principle.
So if this ejection had hit the Earth, it could have knocked out all of our power around the globe or just in parts?
Well, what happens is it generates this large change in the magnetic field. Now, the loops that are analogous to what happens when we generate power is our power grid, the high-tension power lines that encircle our country. They have a huge area. It might go around a large part of Iowa. And when the magnetic field through that loop of wire changes, even if it changes a small amount, because that loop of wire is so enormous, it can induce a very large voltage, megavolts, which is much more than the system can handle. It can cause sparking, and it can actually blow out transformers. Now, that sounds like a minor thing. I mean, we've all seen sort of electronics that burn out. These transformers are multi-ton transformers. It takes a lot to destroy them, but these solar storms can do that. These are the essential pieces of equipment of our electrical infrastructure, of our power infrastructure. If those go down, we can no longer transmit energy from one place to another, electricity. And so this kind of an event, depending on its magnitude of this solar storm, can actually cause a very large portion of our power grid, say, a third of the United States, to undergo these massive overvoltages. And if it knocks out these transformers, and there are many of them, hundreds to thousands of these multi-ton transformers as part of our power grid, if it burns out a large number of them, the problem is we don't have a lot of these things in reserve, and we don't have the industrial capacity to produce them rapidly. So it could take, weeks to months to restore power to parts of the United States that were affected by this.
We're without lights. We're without power. We're without our computers. We're back to, I don't want to say the Stone Age, but we're going back toward in that direction.
Absolutely.
And we would have an apocalyptic scene on the Earth.
It would be. I mean, it's a bit scary to think. You wake up one morning and suddenly there's no power. Well, it's happened to all of us here in Iowa. We get some extreme storms. But, we trust that by the end of the day, or maybe, in the worst case, by the end of the week, power is going to be restored and life goes back as normal. But imagine you don't have any power for months on end. That's the kind of situation that could happen. And it's something that our government does, in fact, take seriously.
It does. So there's what can be done about it, because we can't very well change the sun.
Exactly. I mean, this is a natural consequence. There's nothing we can do to stop it from happening. The interesting thing is there's a very simple way of preventing the damage from occurring, which is simply to break that loop of wire, to shut it off, basically. It's like when you turn off your lights, it breaks the circuit, and now the lights are not shining anymore.
So we just need an early warning.
We need an early warning. We need to shut down the power grid. The problem is we don't know enough about these solar storms to know how strongly they will affect the Earth. And many of these occur. And it's a bit like crying wolf. We can't cry wolf and say, oh, shut down the power grid. There's another solar storm coming. Because if it's a minor one, actually the economic cost to our nation could be much greater by constantly shutting down the power grid because you think something might happen. So what we need to do as scientists is learn more about the characteristics of these solar storms and learn both how to predict them and how to understand, if there is one coming, is it going to hit us? That's part of the problem, because we see something occurring at the sun, and it's not always certain. I mean, there are certain probabilities that it might hit us, and we can calculate that, but it's not always a certain thing. And second, and more importantly, and the most difficult part of the problem, is that two nearly identical storms can differ in small details in ways that one, very large storm won't affect us very strongly, and another moderate storm might cause significant damage. And that's the part of research that's really on the cutting edge that that we're trying to understand.
When we look back in history, do we know that in a less technologically advanced age that any one of these solar storms has in fact hit it, targeted the Earth, and in fact hit it?
Right, exactly. So there have been a number of events through history, and the most significant one happened in September of 1859. It's called the Carrington event because Sir Carrington in England was an astronomer. He was observing the sun. He actually saw the solar flare, that thing that starts this whole process off. And it was so bright that it outshone the sun for a few minutes. It was that bright. And within about a day, this massive coronal mass ejection, the solar storm, hit the Earth. It impacted the Earth so much you actually were able to see the aurora, the northern lights, all the way down to the Caribbean, to Cuba. Apparently in Colorado at midnight when this occurred, you could actually go outside and read the aurora. It was so bright. And the interesting thing is, in those days, we didn't have much of a power system. But there was one system that involved wires going across the country. It was the telegraph. Sort of the early version of what is now our internet, right? Hmm. And it actually, again, caused these massive voltages to be induced in these wires. It set fire to a few telegraph offices and knocked out the telegraph system for a few days until they were to repair the components. But of course, in those days, we had very little sensitive electronic infrastructure. Now, our society depends daily, hourly on this very, in some sense, delicate system of electronics and communications.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know when the next one will happen. We'll actually hit the Earth, do we?
Right. Well, about a year ago, a man named Pete Riley of Predictive Science Incorporated, which is a contracting company that works for NASA, gets NASA funding to study these sorts of things, wrote a paper trying to estimate, well, what is the likelihood of one of these events hitting the Earth? Because, you know, it sounds like we just had a pretty close shave a year ago. We know one hit back in 1859. There have been a few other smaller magnitude events in 1972 and 1989. A solar storm knocked out the power system in Quebec, all of sort of eastern Canada, well, not about the eastern quarter of Canada. So these things happen. We want to know when. He went through the numbers and really tried to be very, very unbiased about it. And he came up with a probability of about 10% that we'll have one of these events hit the Earth in the next 10 years. And that actually puts it on par with the 100-year flood, right? It's like it's an event that we expect to happen with almost certainty within 100 years. Now, we all know about 500-year floods in Iowa. And,
that they happen a lot more frequently.
Exactly, exactly. So we certainly, you know, this is something that our society and our government take seriously. We need to be aware. And it's important for the public to know, what is this? And, you know, what is the science behind it?
Can any one of us do anything individually? If this conversation has raised a few eyebrows out there and the level of anxiety as well, what can we as individuals do?
What we can do as members of the public is talk to your congressmen, talk to your senators. You know, it's federal funding of science that enables us to predict what the effects of these can be and to be able to learn how to protect our society and our infrastructure from these kind of events. So right now we're in an era where the government is trying to cut back on science funding, and it's very hard, even for myself as a scientist, getting funding. The funding outlook right now is very, very grim. So please inform your elected officials that, you know, the funding of science is important. I mean, our nation really depends on it.
Professor Greg Howes, Associate Professor of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Iowa, who studies solar storms and turbulence in solar wind, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
We'll stay tuned.
All right.
And I want to reach out to our listeners and ask you if you've thought what you would do if the lights and power went out for days, weeks, months, as Greg Howes just mentioned. What would you do? Have you made preparations? We're going to talk now with a man who's a consultant who knows a lot about power grid vulnerability. But join us with your questions, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Joining us now for the remaining minutes of the hour, John Kappenman. He's a principal consultant at Storm Analysis Consultants. It's based in Duluth, where he consults many agencies on the impact of solar storms. John, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
You've given assessments of power grid vulnerabilities all across the U.S. I see presentations, reports to various parts of the U.S. government, including presidential commissions and to committees in Congress. We heard about this 2012 near miss of this solar flare a few days ago. Did you know about it beforehand?
Of course. I'd followed the activity that is observed in regards to solar activity and so forth, and we of course observed this event essentially in near real time as it unfolded, and certainly know that it was a large event. It is, you know, one of these things where large events on the sun turn out to be not that rare. The sun is capable of producing events that can cause large storms here at Earth fairly frequently, perhaps about once or twice every 10 years or so. And whether it's aimed at the Earth determines the degree of impact that can occur here to our infrastructures. And, it's essentially like playing a game of Russian roulette with the sun. We know that given sufficient time, a repeat of very large storms is a 100% certain occurrence. And what we also know is that we have now gone out as a society and built a lot of infrastructures that are incredibly vulnerable to this influence. And they have never been built with the idea of a design code that takes this threat into consideration. So unfortunately, we've engineered them in ways that have enormously increased the vulnerability of these systems and, as a result, enormously increased the risk to society.
We heard a little bit of this from our previous guest, Greg Howes, but you can give us the, with your expertise, what it would be like here in Iowa or across the United States or across the globe if that solar flare, a solar flare of that size, was actually on target. It wasn't in 2012. It was a near miss. Describe what would have happened to the best of your knowledge.
When you talk about space weather, geomagnetic storms, you're truly talking about something that a natural disaster that could essentially have a near planetary footprint. So that means, complex developed power grids and economies around the world could be crippled by this event. We know that electric power is perhaps the most important of all of the critical infrastructures that we need as a society. If you take electric power away, within a matter of a few hours, you have lost the ability to produce and distribute potable water to your population. Within a matter of about 12 hours, you have lost your perishable foods. You have also lost your perishable medications. And if you think about it, in the U.S. alone, we have nearly a million type 2 diabetes sufferers that need that highly perishable medication to stay alive. Mm-hmm. So we could be seeing within a matter of just a few days a disaster that would dwarf any other disaster this country has ever experienced. Almost every other system will begin to not function within a short period of time after that. Transportation, the ability to transport fuels, even IT and communication systems will shut down because their backups are only designed to last a few days at the most for loss of grid power.
Okay. We have, unfortunately, just a minute or two left. John Kappenman, tell us, how aware or prepared is our government? Are we as a nation for such an event?
We are not prepared. All of the FEMA preparation and disaster response is – entirely predicated on being able to provide assistance and support from nearby unaffected territories. In the case of a widespread big footprint disaster, we have no framework for how to respond to that in our present experience.
Are there any people pressing for that? You are pressing for that, I assume, when you talk with people in Washington.
Well, I would rather press for not allowing this event to ever begin to unfold.
How do you do that?
I think what we need to do is to do some remedial redesign of power grids to take this threat off the table for all time. And that's a relatively inexpensive thing to do, something on the order of about $1 billion or so for even our large power grid in the U.S. So it's virtually inconsequential to the cost of electric service, but it would guarantee that we don't even have to think about this sort of threat any longer.
Okay, 15 seconds. How likely is that prevention type to take effect?
Well, right now there are standards that are being developed by the industry. The standards are quite weak and inadequate, so much stronger standards need to be considered, and hopefully they will be.
John Kappenman, thank you for joining us. Principal consultant at Storm Analysis Consultants based in Duluth, where he consults many agencies on the impact of solar storms. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on this program, Politics Day, 7 potential GOP presidential candidates making their way to Iowa this week and next. We'll talk about the earliest contenders from the GOP when we convene our Politics Day tomorrow. Hope you'll join us. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks.